Welcome to another episode of Bench Talk. I'm your host, Tom Gerrard. Today I have a bit of a different episode for you. A while back, I was interviewed by Chris M for his School of Struggle podcast. The interview was more aimed at success, mindset, and habits instead of the creative process. I was really happy with the interview, and I thought I'd share it with you. So here's me, Tom Gerrard, on the School of Struggle podcast. Enjoy.
So, Tom, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Man, my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on, and thank you so much for putting on the Bench Talk podcast too, man. So,
no dramas.
Let's start with a little bit of your story, man. So, obviously, you're a podcaster now. You're a world-renowned artist. You literally just got back from the Wonder Wars Festival in Wollongong, which is a graffiti street art festival here in Australia. What got you into art in the first place when you started writing?
Well, like many of us out there, I was academically challenged, and I'm dyslexic. Reading and writing didn't come easy to mm-hmm. me, and math, science, all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I just thought school was really hard. But for some reason, I always did well in the art classes, mm-hmm. and I just thought they were easy. I thought, oh, this isn't that hard at all, and so I was naturally drawn to them, and I enjoyed. Like, I enjoyed doing art. I felt it was something I could actually do. And, as a kid, I was riding to skateboarding and all that, and which got me in circles with people who were doing graffiti as well. And, I just got into doing graffiti through skateboarding, and then that led to art as well. Mm-hmm. So it was like, as I started to grow up and get a bit older, I didn't want to just be a graffiti artist. I was seeing what was happening in the galleries, and I saw friends who were starting to make a career for themselves. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what, I want some of that. I don't want to be, working for the man for the rest of my life. My dream was to be an artist, and now I'm doing that.
That's unreal, man. It's obviously one of the biggest things that I try to tell everyone to do with this show is chase that dream too, right? If you haven't, you can reverse engineer it. You should definitely be doing it at the same time as well. So what were you doing prior to that? You said you quit your job and you went traveling for 5 years, which we'll get into a little bit. But prior to that, obviously you were being a graffiti artist and an artist, which is, on a high level now too, which is amazing. What did Tom Gerrard's life look like before he decided to throw the towel in?
Well, I got kicked out of school, so I never finished high school.
Me too.
At the time, I was living with a bunch of guys who were chefs.
Cool.
And so I, someone was sick, so I'd just go in and just peel potatoes for the day and things like that. And I ended up becoming a chef. I did it for 6 years. But I was never qualified, so I was more of a cook, I guess, glorified cook.
Okay.
But I worked in some pretty swanky restaurants.
Cool.
And then I, met my now wife, and she was English.
Cool.
And so I went over to England for the first time in 2001 and spent a few years over there. And while I was there, I had shitty jobs, just like working in warehouses and I had friends on the dole who were earning like $20 a week less than me. And it's like, wow, they're not even working. I'm working my ass off.
Wow.
So I took a good look at my life and thought, you know what? I need to get educated here. And I looked at the lists on the, of all the creative courses you could do at university, and I saw that graphic design was one of them. And at the time, I was computer literate, and went all the way back to Australia to study graphic design. And I had this story in my head that I'm not good at school, mm-hmm. I'm a bit stupid or something like that. And I actually did really well in, it was a TAFE course, but at the end of the 2 year TAFE course, I got a scholarship to do the final year of a degree.
Awesome.
And that was the first time in my life I thought, hang on, I'm not dumb. I can actually do this,
You killed that limiting belief.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then from there, I just worked as a graphic designer for like 12 years in total. But after the first 6 years of it, I was still in my first job. I got straight out of uni, mm-hmm. and my wife wanted to go back and see her family in England. And we thought, you know what, let's go for it, because I could see myself just being in that job for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It was really good. I worked with good people. It was fun. I knew my job really well, mm-hmm. and I was tempted to up and leave, but there was nothing making me up and leave. So I thought, I'd talk about it, but in reality, I knew I was never going to do it. I wasn't going to go. And so we ended up buying one-way tickets to South America.
Cool.
And we saved up for 3 years and bought and sold all our possessions and said, we're just going to go and travel. And we thought we would last about 6 months in South America, and we were there for almost 2 years.
Wow.
And we started in the north of Brazil and by land went all the way down to Patagonia. And then from Patagonia, we went all the way to New York City by land. And
wow.
Just went on the adventure of a lifetime, really.
Wow.
And on that adventure, we started to really like look inside of ourselves and ask ourselves a question, like, what do we want to be doing with our lives?
Mm-hmm.
And through that, like, I was painting constantly while I was over there. And I had a backpack, so I didn't have a studio. So
yeah,
all my paintings were outdoors. And, you know, I just, like, I started to really work on my style. I filled a lot of sketchbooks and started to really hone in on what I wanted to do as, and I knew I wanted to be an artist. So at the end of that trip, we ended up in London, and I was pursuing the art dream, but it was really hard. It's an expensive city, and we arrived with no cash. And luckily for me, I got a job working for Christie's Auction House as a graphic designer.
Cool.
And through there, I just educated myself on art because I was designing all their catalogs and booklets and stuff like that. I got to look at art all day, and I got familiar with who the artists are, how much their art's worth. And I started like trying to look into why are these artists' paintings worth so much?
Mm-hmm.
And the conclusion I came to at the end of the day is it all came down to marketing.
Correct.
And
like we spoke about just earlier.
Yeah. And it's like saying I'd do a whole booklet on a £7 million painting that's being sold at auction and go, all right, I'm going to read this whole thing and work out why this painting's worth so much.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was spoke around the subject.
Right.
They never actually said why it's worth that much.
Yeah.
And it's just people buying it. And I have this analogy. It's sort of like saying, in 1996, the Spice Girls sold more albums than anyone else, which means that they're the best musicians of that year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not really, because then you've got Wu-Tang Clan and all that sort
of
stuff. You know what
correct,
I mean?
Correct, correct.
So it was just a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's who you can get to talk about that art in a certain way. So it's more about, I guess, building yourself up. And I've got to have a good product as well.
Oh, 100%. But, I think we mentioned that earlier. If your product sucks, the marketing's just going to expose that.
Yeah, yeah. But, backtracking a bit, we had, like, my wife and I went through some really hairy experiences on our travels in South America.
Okay.
Through that, I sort of came out of it with no fear, if you know what I mean. Like, we got kidnapped in the jungles of Colombia and stuff like that. And
wow.
Like, got held at gunpoint. Like,
wow.
You know, I got marched through the jungle with an AK-47 at the back of my head. And
wow.
You know, and I got mugged multiple times. I got into heaps of stuff while I was out painting on the streets.
Wow.
And I didn't know anyone, so I was doing all this on my own.
You know?
Like my wife would hang out and do her thing, and I'll go out painting for the day.
Yeah, of course.
Through doing all that, like, I had all these, I had these situations where I'd be like looking at a spot that I wanted to paint, and I go, should I paint that? And it's like, fuck it, I'm just going to go and go for it. And it's funny now because, like, I'll be, like, watching, like, Narcos on and stuff like that. And be like, oh, that's, like, the area that I painted.
Yeah,
I went
yeah,
up
yeah.
into the barrios and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, wow.
And painted up in there and just did it all on my own. And
wow.
Did a whole bunch of stuff like that. Actually, when I did that, I had my friend with me who's Australian, but I dragged him along. But
wow, that's actually insane.
Yeah, yeah. And through that sort of came out of the trip with no fear and going, hey, like we've been in hostage situations and got out of it. And then you end up in a metropolitan city like London and you go, well, we can do this.
We got no money. Yeah, exactly right.
We can make this work. And at the time I didn't stupidly I didn't prepare a design folio or anything like that before I left, and I had to try and piece together bits of work to try to even get my foot in the door with recruitment agencies and stuff like that. But I just worked my ass off and made like fake like design projects and stuff for myself and put together a folio like that.
Yeah.
And through that, I ended up getting work.
Yeah, right.
I just showed, and I'd talk to them. I'd just say, no, none of this really exists.
Yeah, it's just ideas that I've put together. But imagine if it was something that I could actually work with you on, how good it would be.
Exactly. And I had the technical skills on the computer.
Yeah.
But through that, I ended up working on in really big companies on some amazing projects.
Cool. And
through that, built up a really solid graphic design career for myself.
Unreal. That's actually sensational. And obviously, that's just like the whole thing of sort of going through hell to know that you need to back yourself, right? You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like, and I think that's something that a lot of people listen to this go through, because a lot of people that listen to this podcast right now might not be feeling the greatest and all sort of stuff too, but like, as long as you go through this, you kind of need to, right? Mm. Like, to become the best version of yourself, you need to have the ups and downs at the same time too, you know what I mean? So
exactly.
But obviously, I'd like to know, you said with leaving a job and traveling your world, I was going to ask what the hardest thing about it was, but I think I know that now.
No, that wasn't the hard stuff.
Well, that was maybe the hardest situation. What's the hardest thing that you had to go through while you were over there? And what did that teach you?
The hardest thing was the feeling of being homeless.
Okay.
For 5 years.
Right.
And not really having a place to call home.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. I think, I like to travel and adventure and see the world, but to actually have a place that you can't really call home,
yeah,
is actually really hard for the soul.
Wow.
And my wife and I felt the same.
I can wholeheartedly understand that too.
Like we ended up going, all right, let's settle down. And we moved to Barcelona for a year and a half. And we got ourselves a place, we furnished it, all that sort of stuff. But it wasn't, we furnished it with cheap shit.
I was going to say, did it give you that homely feel?
No. It was sort of like, oh, let's buy some temporary stuff.
Okay.
It wasn't like, let's get a nice leather couch, let's get a good TV.
Your headspace has already told you that it wasn't really that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because we were just like, oh, we'll just stay here for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't properly home. And we own our own place in Melbourne, and we knew that that's where our home was.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, we love living in Barcelona, and it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But even not being 100% fluent in the language, we were always like treated like foreigners. And also, okay. I'm obviously not Spanish as well. You can tell it by looking at me. And I didn't feel I was totally accepted.
Okay.
If you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they speak
a little bit of an outsider, which can obviously play on your head too. You know what I mean? So obviously it'll affect the way that you actually walk into every situation, I'd assume.
Exactly. And we speak Spanish, but over there, everyone speaks Catalan. And
okay.
So to try to even learn Catalan was just like, once again,
barking up the wrong tree sometimes.
Like, learning a language is hard. Well, for me, I find it really hard.
I think it'd be hard for anyone. There's like the linguistic challenges that come across it is obviously like it's not natural.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, you've got so many different things that come up every day too. To learn another language at the same time would be that'd be hard.
Yeah. And we learned Spanish in like Bolivia and Ecuador and places like that, where they speak a bit of a different dialect to what they speak in Spain.
Yeah.
So I felt like They consider that dialect as well to be a bit dopey and a bit slow.
Okay.
So I've been doing like boardroom presentations at work in Spanish, but just knowing that they're sort of like they laugh at me about some of the words I use because that's not how they
speak.
How
it's meant to be said,
or
how they say it anyway, right? Yeah, of course.
Exactly. So like it was, no matter where we're trying to settle down and find our place in the world, the biggest challenge for us was having a place to truly call home.
Mm-hmm. That's like that I imagine would be a huge one in all honesty, man. Far out. So I assume home is Melbourne?
It is.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, 100%.
Any plans to travel soon?
Always looking to travel.
Yeah, of course.
Like my wife and I just returned from Bali for 2 months to escape winter. And now we've got a plan that we never spend winter in Melbourne because we don't like it here over winter.
Actually love that. That's a really, really, really good plan to keep if you can keep it too.
Yeah, well, we're pretty good with this sort of stuff, and we look for things to do. Like she's a yoga teacher and health and wellness coach.
Okay.
So we both look for projects we can do overseas. So
awesome.
For me, I'll go. Oh well, I'm looking to have an exhibition in Tokyo.
Yep.
And then looking to do a project in Spain as well.
Yeah.
And where she's looking to do workshops and retreats and stuff as well. So we're looking at, while it's hot in summer now, we're planning things for next winter.
That's really good. Yeah. I think that's something that I could take away from that. It's unreal.
Yeah. And it's not like just going, oh, we're just going to go on holiday. Because people look at us and think that we're living in a dream world. And it's like, well, no, we're still paying the mortgage. We're still we're putting food in our bellies. We're still trying to live a really high quality of life.
Yeah.
We're just not going into a desk job every day.
And look, to be fair, it's probably best that you don't in that space too. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to help you in any way mentally.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. And like, it's fine if people out there are and do have a desk job too, because that's something you can love as well. You know what I mean? But obviously, for a lot of people that listen to this, this is a very, very, very... it's a very, very, very wanted goal to be had by someone, you know what I mean? And obviously, it's something that is achievable. You just told me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I think it's something that people should at least entertain if they want to.
Yeah, and I think the big key to that for me was upping and leaving that job that I got straight out of uni.
Yep.
Because I could very easily still be in that job. And I've been back and caught up with them for lunch and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, the same guys are still here.
Wow.
And then I'll go to... we'll go out to lunch at the pub and go, wow, the same people are working behind the bar here. It's like, shit.
That's crazy.
And I think about everywhere I've been and everything I've done and...
How much more you've experienced life, you know what I mean? Like, I see that happen a lot too, not with the places or people that I've worked, but I've been to, like, there's a Foot Locker in Sydney.
Mm.
The lady that managed it for, like, 15 years. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? I really hope you like shoes, otherwise you're in the wrong place, firstly. But I just couldn't be in the same, because if you think about that logically too, you're inside a shopping center and you don't get to see daylight all day long, and you're just in one place dealing with what could be average customers at the same time too, versus traveling the world and escaping winter everywhere you go. I think I have my decision.
Yeah, because this life's not for everyone either.
No, definitely
because
not.
There's a lot of challenges that come up and a lot of fear as well.
Yeah.
And it's all about breaking down the barriers of that fear.
Of course.
To go, no, we got this. Like, my wife and I say it all the time. It's like we're approaching something and going, oh, shit, I hope this is going to be all right. And it's like, no, we got this. We got this. And we always come out of it going, man, we nearly chickened out of that. And that was amazing.
Do you have a strategy out there for people that are looking to combat some fears at the moment? What's the process you have to go through? I'm assuming it's quite an internal process too, right? So
yeah, well, it's a lot to do with self belief.
Yeah.
As one thing that really affected me was being I spent like 4 months traveling around like India and Asia and India, but most of the time was in India, and I saw how resilient humans are.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, we're like living in a country like Australia. Like, you know, if you're unemployed, you can go on the dole. If you're, you know what I mean? Like,
I've also got
a rule that if you get 15 grand in debt, you can get yourself out of that pretty quickly.
Yeah, you can.
You know, whereas if people get, $5,000 in debt, they're thinking like, oh, I'm in the red. Like, I can't do anything else. Mm-hmm. But also, I've got this saying that I always believe in, and it's like, leap and the net will appear.
I wholeheartedly agree in that too. You know what I mean? I've actually had this conversation with a few people. Like, I actually had it today, in all honesty, with a client of mine. Every time, and it's happened a few times to me personally recently too, every time that something has actually confronted me and I've been scared by it, it's been the one thing that has actually helped me get further the quickest once I actually tackled that. You know what I mean? Because obviously you get that limiting belief that disappears in the first place if there is one in place. But every time that I've done that recently, and it's been well noticed because I've been quite aware of it at the same time too, at the other end of that fear, I've actually come out not just without a fear, but 10 times further ahead of where I thought I'd be in that space at the same time too. Mm. I mean, so it's a good way to do that. Just sort of don't be a bitch and do it, right?
Like. Exactly. Well, if you really want it, go for it. Because it's like, what's the worst that can happen?
Of course.
Like when people like are afraid to ask for things, you know?
Correct.
What are they going to say? No.
Yeah, exactly. What's the worst they can say when it comes down to it? And I think that's... A lot of people are too scared to do stuff like that because they're scared of rejection.
Exactly.
If you're scared of rejection, get rejected 100 times a day. Mm. Do it on purpose. So that way you actually have no scare of rejection anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read a book about that recently. A guy actually did that. He went out of his way to get... He was super scared of rejection. So he went out of his way and actually... for 100 days in a row, said he was going to get rejected 100 times. by day two, he's just started having fun with it and asking people on the street for $1,000 and stuff. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. and he went to the donut shop, isn't it? Asked for the Olympic rings.
Yes.
Donuts. Yeah. And they just go, yeah, all right, we can do it. And he found that more likely than not, people would say,
yes. Correct. Yeah. Correct. It's correct. Have you heard this?
I've heard him on podcasts.
Yeah. He's real cool. Hey.
Like, yeah. Totally.
And he was saying the first day he was a little bit scared, and then he got over it. He's like, I'm gonna have some fun with it now.
Yeah.
He's that Asian guy. I forget what his name is, but yeah
he seems
quite a character too. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
That's awesome, man. So let's go into the actual next biggest thing that I asked you about in the first place was the fact that you got featured in an art collection with Picasso himself. How the hell did you do that? And what was it like? What was it like for someone who's been an artist for God knows how long to be featured in the same stuff as that too?
Well, it was I joke around with my wife and I say I carry a crowbar around with me.
Okay.
And I see a little opening and I get the crowbar out.
Yeah.
And I just pry it open and just get myself in there.
Yeah, of course.
And this was another one of those situations where at the time I was working in London for a big graphic design agency.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the owners was right into art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was heading to Provence in France for a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, you've got to go to this restaurant called Le Colombe d'Or.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, okay. And I said, why is that? And he said, oh, it's where like Picasso, Matisse and all these other famous artists used to like, go out and eat and drink. And there's photos of them up in the place. And he said, but what they'd do is they'd clock up these big bills and then just give them a piece of artwork and pay off the tabs.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
So what they've done is they've established this really solid art collection. And I thought, I'm going to try and get in this art collection. So I thought about it straight away. And it's like, I'm going to do some artwork and I'm going to give it to them and see if they accept it.
Yeah.
And if they accept it, I'm in this like prestigious art collection in France.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about what the work that I'm doing at the time and thinking, oh, what's a really nice piece that I could do for them? And I did a piece for them. And it was at the time I was doing these like, I thought it was something they could just put up in the kitchen or something, because I didn't think they'd want to hang it on their walls or mm-hmm. anything like that. So I thought, oh, I'll do something for the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So I painted a really nice, like a chrome spray paint blade of a knife, and then did a really nice like watercolored handle.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah, and then and I'd done a few of those sort of paintings at the time, and I got a good response from them. And it's funny because the first time I painted it, I was trying to remember what the knife looked like that I got mugged with in Brazil.
Oh, wow. No way.
But then when people wanted to buy them off me, I told them I used to be a chef and I do like knives. I've got like I like to work with good knives because
cool.
from my chefing background.
Yeah, of course.
And
so don't cross use what you're saying. You've got heaps of knives.
I'm not a violent person at all. So I did one of these paintings for them, and it was only small. It was only A3, and I thought okay. I could do it on paper, and they could frame it themselves mm-hmm. if they even accepted it. And it was easy for me to put in my backpack and carry around. So the day came, I went there, and they weren't open. It was in between meals, and they were shut. And I was like, oh shit! And they had this this rope going across the entrance, sort of like do not enter. It's just a rope, you know. And so I just stepped over that.
Yeah.
I just walked in there. And
yeah.
The lady said, oh, can I help you? And I said, oh, yeah, I'd like to speak with the manager or the owner.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I'm the manager. And I said, oh, okay. And she was, luckily she was English. I don't speak any French, so
yeah.
I could communicate well. And I explained that I'm an artist from Australia. I'm traveling the world, this, that, da, da, da. And then I said, I'd like to donate a piece of artwork to the collection. And she said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, have you got it with you? And I said, yeah, I do. And I pulled out and she said, oh, that's great. I love it. It's a really nice piece. And I said, oh, would you accept it? And she said, 100%. And she was really flattered that mm-hmm. I went in and I went to donate some artwork.
Yeah, of course.
And she said, no one's given us any artwork since the 60s.
Wow.
So everyone's got this perception that this isn't obtainable.
Yeah.
There's no way I could get my work in this collection.
Correct.
So, and she said that the owner of the place is a grumpy bastard. And he comes in, he's swearing, he's throwing his arms around. He's just a really annoying person to be around.
Yep.
He owns the place. And she said next time he comes in, and he comes in, he's in a bad mood and all that, I'm going to give him this artwork and it is going to make his day.
Oh, no way.
I said, are you sure? I said, I thought it's just something you could put in the kitchen. And she's like, the kitchen? No bloody way. This is going like... up on the wall with the rest of our...
Wow.
I said, oh, thanks a lot. And she asked me for all my details. And I gave her all my details.
Did you get a call back from anyone?
No, but she said that she's going to follow my art career.
No way, yeah. That's unreal.
Yeah, and so that was a real big moment for me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Obviously, because of getting into that at the same time too. I'd love to know what the reaction from that guy was, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
You never found that out?
Never found out, because I walked out of the place and never went back.
Yeah, right.
But I want to make it back there, and I want
to
see...
Oh, man, 100%. Yeah. Like, that's quite a big win, you know what I mean? Obviously, you had to go through a bit of stuff to get there too, you know? So
yeah, exactly. And it's just another one of those situations. It's just like, you see this... what can they say? No?
I can walk
away with some art, and it's like it's on a... like, heavy stock piece of paper. It's not heavy. I can put it back in my bag and do something else with it.
Correct.
Give it to someone or whatever. Correct. You know, but I didn't have to do that,
so. That's unreal, man. I love that. And obviously you're now in essentially like a part of a hall of fame with people like Picasso, and that's unreal,
you know? Yeah,
like, look, last couple of questions.
Yeah.
Who are your biggest inspirations?
Haven't really given this much thought. Well, I'd say I grew up hanging out with Dabs Myler, the art steward.
Yeah, yeah.
And to see where they've gone is really inspirational. It's like, because we all grew up the same. We all grew up as equals. And they've moved to LA, and they are just...
They're killing it. They really are.
Absolutely killing it. And to see that they could do that, and I remember when they first moved to LA, as me and all my mates just said, they're tripping. They're tripping. The GFC's just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, up and leaving. They don't really know anyone over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were good, but they weren't amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, oh, we just thought they were, you know, they were just mid-level artists.
Yeah.
They were like any of us. And it's like, well, I wouldn't take that gamble. And saw them go over there, and they work so hard, and they have built an amazing life for themselves, an amazing career. And to see them do that, it's just like, wow, all right. We could be doing so much. I could be doing so much more with my
Everyone life. Can. You know what I mean? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And since then, that's when I went traveling and all that. And even, you know, when we crossed the border from, like, Mexico into the States, you know, we made our way up to LA and ended up staying with them and just got a real good insight of how their life was. And it was
cool.
Like, wow, they're killing it.
Yeah, definitely. That's unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never really thought about that. I've got to thank him.
You should send him a note on that, man,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
What's a question you wish people would ask you more?
Oh, jeez.
You've got a wealth of knowledge, man. Obviously,
yeah, I don't know.
Because obviously, you're the person usually gets. So you're the person that's usually asking the questions on a podcast, right? So what's a question you wish people would ask you more?
I think, as we were talking about earlier, I'm setting up your day is really important.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm in crowds where people don't speak about that type of stuff, and they think that I'm a bit loopy because I have like a 2-hour routine every morning before I even leave the house. And
what does that consist of?
Well, my wife's a yoga teacher, so she's got me doing yoga every day.
Cool.
And I really notice when I don't do it.
Right.
And then, you know, I use the Headspace app and do a 20-minute meditation, and I've done that every day for about 4 years now.
Yeah.
And that has changed everything for me.
It's unreal, hey?
Yeah. And then I make myself a nice big breakfast. I have a shower. I make myself a nice big breakfast and do a drawing over coffee. So I've got a coffee drawing rule.
Yep.
Every time I have a coffee, I open a book and do a drawing.
Cool.
So
I'd be doing a lot of drawings.
Yeah. So I try not to plan meetings over coffee because...
Okay,
I
understand that. I understand
because
that.
Because then I look rude.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not being rude. This is my rule.
Yeah.
And through that, I've developed a full art style for myself.
Wow.
Like, because I used to draw a lot of graffiti all the time. And it's like every time I open a sketchbook, I'll just do like... I used to, you know, do an Aeon sketch or whatever. And now I bought all these little books and I have a rule that there's no graffiti allowed in them.
Right. Okay, cool. So you obviously develop a new art style, of course.
Exactly. I have to find something non-graph.
Yeah.
To do. And through those morning routines and sticking to my guns, it's, you know, it's opened up. Like, I'm healthy because of it.
Mentally.
Physically, mentally, and creatively.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're all the very important parts of my life.
I really like that coffee and drawing one. That's unreal, because obviously you have to drink coffee firstly, but you've basically built a new skill out of it.
Exactly.
Which
and developed a style.
Super amazing.
Yeah. Like, all those books are behind you. See all those little books there?
Is that them?
That's them.
That's cool.
I've done 50 of them so far.
Yeah, that's unreal.
Yeah. And I've been doing it for about 4 years.
Wow.
So all this routine stuff sort of started around the same time.
Yeah.
And it was all through, like, listening to podcasts.
That's... Yeah, no, of course. I think that is a really, really, really good way to start your day too, and I'm really glad I asked as well, because I really like just that structure of the having a coffee and drawing something, you know what I mean? Like, there's a million people out there that drink 9 coffees a day, right? Imagine if they had to actually practice something and they had to practice it 9 times a day, how much further they'd be in a week, month, year, you know what I mean? Like, that's
exactly...
That is crazy. I really like that.
Like, I look at the first books I did and they're really basic line drawings.
Yeah.
And I look at them now and they're like, I can own a page properly.
Yeah.
And it's like I can just translate that into a painting.
Of course. Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. Lastly, any advice out there for people that want to follow their dreams?
Leap and the net will appear.
100%. I couldn't agree more on that.
Just go for it. Like, really. Like, one of the podcasts that I really like is called by a guy called Todd Henry. He's got a podcast called The Accidental Creative,
mm-hmm.
and he wrote a book called Die Empty.
Okay.
And it's all about emptying yourself with all your hopes, dreams, and creativity, and everything that's innate within you.
Yeah.
And so being on your deathbed going, you know what, I gave everything a crack. And there's none of these should have, could have, would have thoughts.
Of course.
I didn't try hard enough.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, I gave everything a go.
I gave everything that everything I said that I wanted to do is something that I actually went out and did.
Yeah. And people forget that we're all going to die at some stage.
Yeah.
And, like, there's this idea in our head that it's like we're going to reach this pinnacle in our life. Oh, when I get here, when I get there.
Correct.
You know, it's like when this happens, when that happens, not realizing that right now's
the time.
Is your journey.
Correct.
This
is the time that you look back on and go, I thought about that and I should have done it right there and then.
Exactly. And people think that things are just going to open up and land in their lap as well. And you got to make things happen. So if there's any dreams, ambitions or anything like that you want to achieve, just go do it.
Yeah, 100%.
No one's going to give them to you.
100%.
You know.
I couldn't agree more, you know what I mean? That's good advice in all honesty as well. So yeah. Where can we find you?
You can see my art on Instagram, Tom_Gerard_. I've got
Gerard spelt.
GERRARD.
Cool.
Thanks. And then I've got a website, tom-gerard.com. The podcast is Bench Talk, 2 words. That's on everywhere you listen to podcasts. And I've also got a website, benchtalkpodcast.com, and that way you can listen to it there, but also see images from all the artists.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And look, Tom, again, thank you so much for being on today.
No worries.
And I look forward to working with you and some stuff in the future as well, my man.